Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. New York, this is Democracy Now!
We found evidence that Saudi border guards have used explosive weapons and shot people at close range in what appears to be a policy targeting migrants and asylum seekers, including women and children.
Human Rights Watch is accusing Saudi Arabia of killing hundreds of Ethiopian migrants and asylum seekers who've tried to cross the Yemen-Saudi border. We'll get the latest. Then we look at the 70th anniversary of the CIA and MI6-backed coup in Iran after Iran's democratically elected prime minister, Mohammad Mossadegh, nationalized Iran's oil industry.
In 1953, the United States, together with Britain, participated in a coup in Iran that got rid of Mossadegh.
Mossadegh and his government were swept from power in favor of General Zahedi. 300 killed and hundreds wounded is a conservative estimate.
We'll speak to the Iranian filmmaker Taghi Amirani, who directed the documentary Coup 53, as well as Ervand Abrahamian, one of the leading historians of modern Iran. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. In Greece, the remains of at least 18 people believed to be asylum seekers were found in the Dagia Forest, where wildfires have been blazing for nearly a week. The dense forest is near the Turkish border in northeastern Greece, making it a common migration route for people fleeing Syria and other countries in the region with the hopes of reaching Europe. Blistering heat waves and dry and windy conditions have set off dozens of wildfires across Greece. Hundreds of firefighters have been deployed to fight the blazes while hospitals and clinics are almost at capacity. This is a nurse in the city of Alexandroupolis.
I've been working for 27 years. I've never seen anything like this. It's like war conditions, really. Stretchers everywhere, patients here, IV drips there. We had to arrange them by clinic. We had to get them on their meds, their serums, everything. It was like a war, like a bomb had exploded.
Countries across Europe are in the midst of yet another heat wave as temperatures hit or top 104 degrees Fahrenheit in Italy and France. Here in the United States, heat indexes have been approaching 130 degrees Fahrenheit in some areas as triple-digit temperatures scorch much of the Midwest, the Central Plains, and Southern states. Nearly 150 million people were under heat alerts Tuesday. Voters in Zimbabwe are casting ballots in nationwide elections today as President Emmerson Mnangagwa and his ruling ZANU-PF party face another challenge from Nelson Chamisa. In 2018, Chamisa contested his loss to Mnangagwa, and six people were killed in post-election protests. Mnangagwa was previously a liberation fighter who came to power in 2017 after leading a coup that ousted Robert Mugabe. Chamisa has vowed to implement economic reforms and bring Zimbabwe out of isolation, stemming from EU and U.S. sanctions over human rights concerns. Chamisa addressed supporters at a rally Sunday.
Mr. Mnangagwa is not preparing to win. He's plotting to rig. I told SADC that he stole the election in 2018, but this time I will not accept to allow him to steal the election again.
The African Union has suspended Niger over the July 26 military coup. The AU also said it would, quote, evaluate the repercussions of possible military intervention by the West African bloc ECOWAS, but rejected any military action from outside the African continent. Earlier this week, ECOWAS rejected a three-year transition back to civilian rule proposed by the head of Niger's military junta, General Abdourahmane Tchiani. The junta has received significant support from Nigerians following the coup. in Sudan, fighting between military and paramilitary forces over control of a key army base in the capital Khartoum continued for a third day Tuesday. Thousands have been killed and millions displaced since violence broke out more than 4 months ago. This comes as Save the Children says some 500 children, including two dozen babies who are under the care of a government-run orphanage in Khartoum, have died of hunger. The group also reported about 30,000 children no longer have access to medical treatment for malnutrition and other illnesses after the aid group was forced to shut down dozens of its nutrition centers due to the conflict in Sudan. Japan announced it'll start releasing radioactive wastewater from the Fukushima nuclear plant into the Pacific Ocean starting Thursday. The move has been condemned by a number of Pacific nations, including China.
This is extremely selfish and irresponsible. China strongly urges the Japanese side to rectify its wrongful decision and withdraw its plan to discharge nuclear-contaminated water into the sea.
Hong Kong and Macau said they'll impose a ban on seafood imports from 10 Japanese prefectures. Opponents in South Korea and Japan have ramped up protests since the plan was approved last month by the International Nuclear Agency. This is a protester in Tokyo.
The nuclear disaster happened in Japan, and Japan should send a solid message to the world. But the government told the world that it's safe without showing a scientific evidence. That's really outrageous. In the future, the children will bear the burden and have health issues.
In Cambodia, lawmakers officially elected Hun Manet, the son of a long-standing outgoing Prime Minister Hun Sen, to be the country's new leader. Hun Sen won re-election last month after eliminating any viable challengers and declared just days later his son would succeed him. Hun Manet is a military general. Analysts say Hun Sen is expected to keep wielding the bulk of Cambodian political power even as he transfers the premiership to his son. China, Russia, and South Africa have called for expanding the ranks of BRICS membership as the group summits underway in Johannesburg, South Africa. BRICS currently is made up of Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, but a number of countries from the Global South have expressed interest in joining, including Saudi Arabia, Indonesia, Iran, Argentina, and Egypt. The Brazilian president, Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, addressed the summit Tuesday.
I've been defending the idea of adopting a common trade currency for trade that won't replace our national currencies. We've already overtaken the G7 and are responsible for 32% of the world's GDP in purchasing power parity terms. Projections indicate that emerging, developing markets are the ones that will show the highest rate of growth in the coming years.
Russia said three people were killed in drone strikes earlier today in Belgorod near the Ukrainian border. Separately, drone attacks continued in Moscow, with one hitting a high-rise building. Putin virtually addressed the BRICS summit today and blamed his invasion of Ukraine on Western powers attempting to preserve their hegemony. Meanwhile, the U.S. is urging American citizens in Belarus to leave immediately as tensions mount from the war in Ukraine. The U.S. Embassy in Minsk said citizens should avoid traveling to Belarus, citing the, quote, continued facilitation of Russia's unprovoked attack on Ukraine, the buildup of Russian military forces in Belarus, and the arbitrary enforcement of local laws, unquote. At least 16 people were killed and 36 wounded when a bus crashed into a freight truck in central Mexico Tuesday. Some of the injured are asylum seekers from Venezuela who were headed to the U.S. border for an appointment with Customs and Border Protection. The most recent reports say the majority of victims are Mexican nationals. Transportation accidents are a leading cause of death for asylum seekers traveling from Mexico's southern border to the U.S. In New Jersey, residents in Plainfield are calling for the resignation of a city planning board member after she threatened immigrant protesters with calling ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, to have them deported. A live video recording posted on Facebook showed board member Carmencita Pyle asking questions about the immigration status of peaceful demonstrators who gathered at a street fair over the weekend, demanding Plainfield and state provide affordable housing. She's heard saying, quote, all you need is an ICE truck. They'll all be running. The protesters, many of them families, were evicted from their homes earlier this month after their building was condemned due to hundreds of violations. The group Make the Road New Jersey said on social media, quote, immigrants in New Jersey deserve respect, dignity, and safe homes, not deportation. Attorney John Eastman, a key figure in Donald Trump's bid to overturn the 2020 election, surrendered at the Fulton County Jail in Atlanta Tuesday. He's one of Trump's 18 co-defendants charged in Georgia's racketeering case. He spoke to reporters outside the jail, where he claimed he and Trump will be fully vindicated.
Do you regret attaching your name to the former president?
None whatsoever. The president calls and asks for representation. I think every citizen in my position should be willing to stand up for representation.
Are you claiming immunity from prosecution?
I'm not answering that question.
Trump has said he will surrender on Thursday. Former White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows has asked a federal court to block his arrest in Georgia and transfer his case to federal court, claiming the charges stem from his position in the U.S. government. Meanwhile, the first Republican presidential debate is taking place this evening in Milwaukee. Eight candidates will take the stage: Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, South Carolina Senator Tim Scott, former South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley, entrepreneur Vivek Ramaswamy, former Vice President Mike Pence, former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum, and former Arkansas Governor Asa Hutchinson. Frontrunner Trump opted to skip the debate, citing his lead in the polls. He's also refused to sign an RNC pledge to support the eventual Republican nominee. A federal appeals court ruled in favor of an Alabama law banning gender-affirming care for trans youth, including providing hormone treatments and puberty blockers. The Trump-appointed three-judge panel overturned an injunction by a lower court against the ban. All major medical groups have backed gender-affirming care, which is considered life-saving for many. In related news, a federal judge partially blocked a law banning transgender health care for minors in Georgia. The ruling says the ban on medical professionals providing patients with hormone therapy is likely unconstitutional. Also in Georgia, the Cobb County School Board in Atlanta voted last week to fire a longtime teacher who read the book My Shadow is Purple, which is about gender fluidity and inclusiveness, to her fifth grade students. The ACLU says 230 anti-LGBTQIA education laws have been advanced across the United States this year. And in Atlanta, the family of a man who died earlier this month after police tased him is demanding accountability and for the video of his encounter with police to be released. Johnny Holman, a 62-year-old black grandfather and church deacon, was hit by another driver as he was headed home. When the police showed up, they ended up handcuffing and tasing Holman, who later died at the hospital. Atlanta Mayor Andre Dickens has ordered a full investigation into his death. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. Coming up, Human Rights Watch is accusing Saudi Arabia of killing hundreds of Ethiopian migrants and asylum seekers who've tried to cross the Yemeni-Saudi border. We'll get the latest. Stay with us.
I want to know.
Fatoumata Diarra. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Democracy Now! Co-host Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
The Ethiopian government says it plans to investigate a report that border guards in Saudi Arabia have killed hundreds of Ethiopian migrants and asylum seekers who've tried to cross the Yemen-Saudi border since March 2022. In a statement Tuesday, Ethiopia's foreign ministry called the deaths a, quote, alleged mass execution, and said it'll conduct the probe, quote, in tandem with the Saudi authorities. This comes after Human Rights Watch published a damning new report that documents the killings and calls for them to cease immediately. The report cites firsthand accounts from 42 people, over 100 verified videos and photos, and an analysis of satellite imagery. This is an excerpt of a video accompanying the report, a warning it contains graphic descriptions and images.
Even when I remember, I cry. I saw a guy calling for help. He lost both his legs. He was screaming and saying, "Are you leaving me here? Please don't leave me." We couldn't help him because we were running for our lives.
Ethiopian migrants and asylum seekers have been tortured, injured, or killed by Saudi Arabian border guards at the Yemen-Saudi border. At least hundreds have been killed trying to make this crossing between March 2022 and June 2023.
When Saudi border guards see a group, they fire continuously. When they kill everyone, they go down to collect all those who didn't die. This is what happened to me. I survived. And they came to meet me and showed me the dead. Then they took us to a detention center and beat us all there.
Human Rights Watch's extensive investigation includes first-hand accounts from 42 people and the verification and geolocation of over 100 videos and photos and the analysis of hundreds of square kilometers of satellite imagery. We found evidence that Saudi border guards have used explosive weapons and shot people at close range in what appears to be a policy targeting migrants and asylum seekers, including women and children, at the border. Human Rights Watch believes this may amount to crimes against humanity. Saudi Arabia's border forces should stop intentionally using lethal force to kill Ethiopian migrants and asylum seekers with explosive weapons.
That's part of a video accompanying the new Human Rights Watch report titled, "They Fired on Us Like Rain." In a minute, we'll speak with the report's author. First, this is a man in Ethiopia named Mustafa Sofyan Mohammed, who lost his leg after being shot at while attempting to cross into Saudi Arabia.
Two years ago, I went to Saudi via Djibouti, thinking I would find a job to change my family and my life. I came back to my family empty-handed, with only one leg. We were 45 in number, and only three survived. Of that, I am sure. I called them all and managed to speak to three of them. The rest are unreachable. The rest, only God knows what happened to them. They were firing nonstop, and I thought the sky was falling on me. I cannot describe how shocking the sound was. Bullets came from our back and front. I thought I was dreaming at first. I couldn't believe my eyes. I looked around and landed my eyes again at it and knew I had no leg anymore. I started praying, lying there. My fellow Ethiopians planning to go to Saudi, please look at me. There is a rain of bullets waiting for you. Look at me and learn.
We're joined right now by the report's author, Nadia Hardman, a researcher in the Refugee and Migrants' Rights Division of Human Rights Watch. Nadia, welcome to Democracy Now!, a devastating report. Talk about how you learned of this and explain further what has taken place over the last year.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on the program. Look, I've been documenting this route, the eastern route that's not very well known, of predominantly Ethiopian migrants that are leaving from the Horn of Africa through Yemen, facilitated by smuggling and trafficking networks that are extremely abusive in themselves, to the border with Saudi Arabia, trying to cross and access job opportunities, in the country. We know that over 750,000 Ethiopians actually do live and work in Saudi Arabia, so there are job opportunities they're trying to get to. In the past, I'd say since 2014, we have documented border killings by Saudi border guards, but these were infrequent and occasional. Generally, the pattern previously was one of mass detentions in horrifying detention centers inside Saudi Arabia and then deportations back to Ethiopia. What we found in this report, and I'd say really it's an escalation from the last 2 years, is a complete change in policy from occasional shootings to widespread and systematic attacks, use of explosive weapons against large groups of unarmed migrants and asylum seekers, many of them are women and kids, or shootings at close range of smaller groups trying to cross into the country. And, you know, we've also supplemented, you know, the many testimonies that I collected with a massive digital investigation where we were able to analyze kilometers of satellite imagery, posts, Saudi border guard posts all along that route to show that the Saudis knew or should have known that they were firing on migrants and asylum seekers from Ethiopia. We found burial sites that have increased over the research period that I conducted. And we've also geolocated videos of dead and wounded migrants that I think you probably saw in the video that was just screened.
And Nadia, I wanted to ask you, Ethiopia is one of the largest countries in Africa in terms of population, second only to Nigeria, about 125 million people. You mentioned 750,000 approximately Ethiopians are working in Saudi Arabia. What is driving those who are fleeing the country? What are the conditions in Ethiopia that they face?
Yeah. I mean, it's a good question. And honestly, the reasons have remained steady over the years. The conflicts and the, you know, locality of those conflicts have changed. We know that the conflict in northern Ethiopia has driven a lot of the Tigrayans that I interviewed. And then extreme poverty. You know, most people who I spoke to who left said that they were, you know, desperate to try and access a better life in Saudi Arabia. And they know Ethiopians working there. You know, there is a diaspora inside Saudi Arabia living and working. You know, I don't know if it's successfully, but generally they're making a living. There's also this criminal network of smugglers and traffickers that do prey on and exploit Ethiopians that potentially don't know what awaits them. You know, I heard a figure that over 50% didn't know that there was a conflict inside Yemen. I certainly don't think they understand potentially the brutality they may face. I spoke to women and girls that were sexually assaulted by other migrants and their traffickers, you know, during the journey, and then had to undergo the killings that they witnessed when they tried to cross the border.
And what's been the response of the Ethiopian and Saudi governments, especially in Saudi Arabia? Has there been basically a change of policy from the top in the government in dealing with migrants coming into the country?
Look, a lot of, you know, the questions I get on this, you know, my responses are generally conjecture because we haven't had a direct engagement with the Saudi authorities on this. We did receive a reply from the Houthi forces who are also implicated in our report because they facilitate access to the border of smugglers and traffickers. So they're helping people get there. But from the Saudi authorities, no, we wrote a list of questions and we put our findings to the authorities well over 3 weeks ago with a long list of questions, and we did not receive a reply. Anything that I've seen recently in the last few days since we released the report has been replies to journalists. And this new joint investigation that was announced, you know, we've not received any statement on that. That's again, a general statement that's been put out. You know, I would definitely cast doubt on the independence of an investigation conducted by Ethiopia and Saudi Arabia. I don't know of a single credible investigation that the Saudi authorities have conducted on the just massive violations that they have committed against Ethiopian migrants and other migrants, for that matter, inside the country. And I don't have any faith that they would conduct an independent investigation on these mass killings. I would also point out that the UN, in the form of its independent rapporteurs, wrote to Saudi Arabia last year, and these letters were made public in October, outlining similar abuses to ours. And Saudi Arabia responded in March of this year, in 2023, and said that they found no evidence of any of the kind of allegations that were listed there. I think we have already shown that Saudi Arabia is unwilling and unable to conduct any kind of meaningful investigation. And we need that for the victims, and especially redress for them.
Now, Nadia, your report clearly finds systemic attacks and killings of those crossing the border. Can you talk more about Saudi border guards firing explosive weapons at migrants who'd just been released from temporary Saudi detention?
Yeah. I mean, this was actually the last case that I interviewed. I mean, I generally interviewed a practice of, you know, Saudi border guards collecting the survivors. So people would, you know, undergo an explosive weapon attack. You know, people said they were fired at by mortar projectiles. So deeply traumatized. And then they would be and injured much of the time, approached and by Saudi border guards who would then temporarily detain them in detention centers, which were also abusive, and they experience ill treatment and torture inside them, and obviously no medical assistance or care. But this one case that is really, it's the last case I interviewed, is this woman crossed the border, was detained by Saudi border guards who took her to a detention facility for 8 months. She was then released and pushed back towards the Yemeni border, and then her and her group were fired on by an explosive weapon. So she was literally fleeing back into Yemen, and her group sustained this attack, and she witnessed 20 people killed. She then also sent me a photograph of the wound that she had, the gaping wound on the side of her face that she suffered because of shrapnel, she said, that flew at her face. And I think that's also shown in our video, I believe.
And where are the weapons from, Nadia?
So, look, one thing, you know, we don't know is who is manufacturing the weapons and exactly what is being used. Again, we asked Saudi Arabia, you know, a list of questions about this. We did find, you know, Saudi border guard posts, and we found vehicles where we believe there's machinery mounted on top of them. You can't see much from satellite imagery. So we're going on a lot of witness testimony. But one thing we did do is send the pictures that individuals I interviewed sent me, you know, graphic images and video footage, and we sent that to some external forensic experts who confirmed that the images are consistent with explosive weapons use and show evidence of fragmentation, shrapnel, burn scars. So, you know, we're confident that explosive weapons are used, you know, and obviously the question as to who's making them, where are they from, exactly what is being used is something that we want to investigate further and ask the Saudis particularly to come forward with this.
And do you know if the mass killing is continuing?
Yeah, I continue to receive reports that the killings are ongoing. I'm not investigating right now because we put out the report, but it's extremely distressing to know that this is continuing to this day. And that's our constant and immediate call to Saudi Arabia to cease killing Ethiopian migrants and asylum seekers at its border, and to implore other governments to put pressure on Saudi Arabia. There's a menu of recommendations that we have that states could, you know, implement to ensure that there is accountability for these horrendous crimes.
Nadia Hardman, want to thank you for being with us, author of the new Human Rights Watch report titled "They Fired on Us Like Rain." Nadia is a researcher in the Refugee and Migrants Rights Division of Human Rights Watch. We'll link to that report at democracynow.org. Coming up, it's the 70th anniversary of the CIA MI6-backed coup in Iran, 1953. Stay with us. Silence of the Night by Mohammad Reza Shajaran. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. We turn now to look at this 70th anniversary of an event that reshaped the Middle East, the 1953 U.S. and U.K.-backed coup in Iran that overthrew Iran's democratically elected Prime Minister, Mohammad Mossadegh.